Welcome to the Radical Global Marketing Podcast. In each episode, we go deep with the world's leading international marketers and discuss the ideas and processes that make their global marketing strategies a success. Let's get radical.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the latest Radical Global Marketing Podcast. My name's Stephen, one of your regular co-hosts, and today I've got another brilliant guest with me, another exciting marketing leader to share their story and experience. I'm delighted to be joined by Andy Smith, the founder and CEO of Strategic. Andy is a hugely driven and insightful marketer, a logical and analytical thinker. He possesses enthusiasm, vision, objectivity, and accountability. Strategic is an award-winning strategy-first marketing agency founded in 2013. The UK-based team offers its clients a truly personalized experience based on their ability to uncover valuable insights and competitor beating opportunities, defining and delivering impactful marketing strategies. Now, Andy will go into that in more detail much better than I can in just a minute. But first, we've got a message from our sponsor. The Radical Global Marketing Podcast is produced in association with Brandigo China. Brandigo's team of local and international marketing talent has been helping multinational brands achieve marketing success in China for almost two decades. This is founded on their unique, radically relevant China marketing methodology built on insight, creativity, and flawless execution across multiple China marketing channels. To find out more about Brandigo China and how they can help your brand meet your China business objectives, visit brandigochina.com or contact the Brandigo China team, and we'll put all of the links in the show notes. Andy, good morning. How are you doing today?
Doing great, thank you. Yeah, feeling splendid.
Excellent. Where in the world are you today?
In London, actually, today.
Oh, very nice.
We've got four offices now in the UK. So, I'm hanging out in our London office this morning.
Excellent. Where are the others?
So we have where we were founded in Suffolk, just north of London, if anyone knows the UK. And then we've got another office just south of Birmingham in a place called Leamington Spa or yep. Royal Leamington Spa. And 3 weeks ago, we opened up our new Manchester office.
Oh, so congratulations.
We've gone up to your old neck of the woods.
Well, kind of. Actually, I was based in Manchester for a long time. I did a 10-year stint in London and a 10-year stint in Manchester. So I've left just as you guys have got there. So more fool me.
Well, I haven't been up there. I'm going up to the office to meet the team on Thursday. So that'd be my first trip to the new office. So looking forward to that.
Very much. Well, look, we'll talk about that when we come on to talking about the business in a little bit more detail in just a second, because obviously that's a really exciting development that we can discuss. But just to kick things off, I'd love to spend a little bit of time just learning a little bit more about your journey to where we are today. You know, how you became a marketing professional, a bit of career background, if you wouldn't mind.
Not at all. So marketing professional, Christ, there's a build up to all of that. So I guess without sort of going too far back, you know, from college or university, my first proper job, as I'll call it. Actually, no, I'll start off. My first actual job was an estate agent, which I still profess to this day is one of the best jobs I've had.
I used to sell trainers, and that's one of the best jobs that I've ever had.
Okay, then let's go back to the real roots. My favorite ever job was working in Topshop. In retail. No, I'm joking. I did work in there, but it wasn't my favorite job. So a quick stint in the estate agent role, which I loved, but I guess where I start to open me up to marketing, probably more advertising, was I went into corporate world and to Yellow Pages.
Yeah.
And, it was a great foundation. I wouldn't necessarily say for pure marketing at the time. But what it did was for probably 12 years I was there, I spent 8 years of those face to face with businesses. So the job was to go and see, they'd give you 100 clients and you'd travel around the country and you'd go and talk to them about their business and who their clients were and how they wanted to grow and how they were going to grow. And then you would sell them an advertising campaign in the wonderful thing that was that big printed yellow. I'm showing my age now, but that printed Yellow Pages. And then obviously that moved more digital. Yellow Pages became Yell, and Yell were kind of quite early to market with a directory and the early sort of signs before Google sort of kind of took over really. So I learned I learned how to talk to businesses, and I think that's where the strategy love came from. And I think that's where I got a real baseline understanding of how to sell and how to deliver advertising campaigns. So, and then I moved into the kind of whole senior leadership team. So I did the sales piece and went first line management, second line management. And Yale was just such a great company for training and development. Once you were there, some brilliant people you were surrounded by. And then Google came along basically and just flattened the Yellow Pages as a brand. I think a lot of my old friends that we still talk to now, there was a major transition when everyone sort of went online to, instead of picking up the book, to get a product or a service certainly in the UK and across the world. So I left Yale and, joined a more traditional or early startup sort of digital marketing company, based in the Midlands. And we were basically selling websites and SEO. So it was my first introduction to, you know, what I would call pure digital. Joined in the senior role, kind of moved into sales director and, worked with the board at that point on developing the business. But at the heart of it was still around understanding what a client's needs were and what product service kind of suited that need and sort of delivering a sales and marketing plan. And then 10 years ago, as you said in the intro, I decided that I had to, what was I at that time? 36. Yeah, 36. I thought there was a few changes at the top of the business that I was in. And I remember driving home and saying to my wife after convincing her to do a relocation to the Midlands that should we move back because I want to set an agency up. And the heart of my kind of, as you said, it's like, how did I build up my marketing skill? Was more around that kind of yellow page, understanding businesses, sitting down with them and understanding the challenges and how to help solve them.
I can see two advantages to that. I can see being part of that corporate organization, because that's almost kind of a getting experience from a client side of how things work. But then also, as you mentioned, all of those conversations with so many different businesses and all their unique challenges and pain points must have been a fascinating journey and really good insight from that too.
I loved it. I was dealing with big insurance companies with massive budgets or a landscape gardener, you know, and so you got to learn, you know, from a young age. I learned how to communicate with businesses at all levels, you know, from the boardroom through to the business. I mean, I would be sitting at 7 o'clock in the evening, with a cup of tea while a builder was sitting there eating his dinner, talking about, you know, he wanted to build houses, and you're going, you know, it was such a diverse grounding on how business people run. And also what it gave you is, a real appreciation for, what it means for a business owner to make big business decisions from the ground up. But it also got you into the, as you said, the corporate grounding was the best thing. You know, even learning how to act as a young sales guy, let's call it as it was, in leadership meetings. And I think I tell this story a lot, actually, when I meet clients about the story of, I guess, actually not necessarily clients, but from a recruitment point of view. So my experience with the agency world is traditionally you get two types of agency owners or leaders. You get the creative who is just a brilliant creative and then sort of partners with another creative and they win a lot of work. And next thing you know, they're running a really cool creative agency and they get up to sort of 20 people, win some great work. But their heart is still a creator, it's still a creative. Yeah. And I'm sure there's others transition, but it's only opinion stroke observation where I think when it becomes to running a business and leading the business and the numbers, that left hand, right hand brain generally struggles a bit. So unless you get a creative that partners with a more traditional sort of business lead, they tend to sort of hit a few hurdles and barriers. So you get them sort of really great creative agencies that grow, and lots of friends of mine that have done brilliant jobs building up creative agencies. They get to a point where they go, I'm just bored of all this. I want to just get back to doing the creative, the thing I love. And then on the other side of the agency world, you get these brilliant technical brains, you know, like the big heavyweight SEO or now data type agencies that create great products. And they're run by some really smart people. But those smart people, and again, lots of friends that I have, they don't necessarily love the business element to it or the creative side. So you end up with a situation in the agency world where you have brilliant creative people, brilliant techie people. And I I've always said that I sit in the middle of that. I'm not a creative. Well, I'm a bit of a frustrated creative. I do like to have a little bit of play with it. But that's the advertising guy coming out with me, the old traditional ad man coming up with headlines. And so I'm a frustrated creative, but I'm not by any means a kind of a graphic designer. But I'm not a techie either. I'm kind of your traditional sales leadership, I guess, business owner. And I've just happened, as Strategic's grown, is to surround myself with brilliant creatives and brilliant techie people. But I feel comfortable in that sales space. I feel comfortable because that was my sort of heritage, going out and selling advertising and selling marketing.
Yeah.
So it's meant that the agency has always had a core sales engine to it.
Yeah.
But based around that kind of lovely, I guess, ethical approach to understanding how to structure a strategy or how to structure it. So, yeah. That's the background.
It's an interesting observation for sure. And on reflection, I think you're exactly right. As you say, finding someone that's got that sort of middle ground that can run a business and that side of thing, but could also speak the language of the other two parties as well, is kind of hugely valuable. But that takes me kind of, I'd like to just talk a little bit, because it's an interesting step into the marketing agency world, if you like, to go in. So, again, using a typical example, I came out of university with a marketing related degree. I went to work for a big agency in London, and then I worked for a big agency in Manchester, and you kind of go up the career ladder that way. Real typical stuff. You sort of coming in as this more business development role, sales role for the agency Lemity. I think that's a really interesting step into the world, if you like. First of all, what were some of the brands that you were targeting or some of the businesses you were looking to work with within that role? And I'd just like to go over again, that sales background that you had, that leadership background that you had, must have been a really unique thing for that agency to take advantage of.
Particular brands. So if I answer this with obviously my strategic hat on now, rather than necessarily historically, I think I've always maintained that as an agency, we're sector agnostic, and there's lots of agencies out there that become specialists in certain industries and certain sectors. And there's some massive advantages to doing that, right? There's economies of scale. There's bright thinking. I never really subscribed to that, only on the basis that, again, it probably comes back to my core upbringing in corporate world, where I love the business challenge, not necessarily the brand and sector challenge. I just love to sitting there and understanding the different challenges that a business or a brand might be experiencing. So I don't think as an agency we've ever really gone, we want to necessarily be famous in this space, in this brand, or target to usual.
Yeah.
The way that we think now is, and we've started to think about this as our own strategy, and I think we could touch on this a bit later, but this might give the answer some context. The way we know that there's brands we want to go and look and target now, and we use the language around brands we want to work with, and they generally are global brands now that we're targeting that already understand strategy, that seem to have a strategy team or a strategy in play, because it can be quite difficult sometimes going to a business or a brand that is maybe creative first, not strategy first. So it's making sure the language is common is really important to us. And then we've got buckets. So we have three buckets. The first bucket is, what are the brands we want to go and work with? Then we have a bucket, which is, what are the brands that want to work with us? So that's generally the sort of lead gen that comes into the agency. So how are we targeting the people that we want to work with our marketing outreach? And generally, our content is mainly talking to CMOs that are struggling with the kind of go-to-market digital playbook. Probably what we're saying, we would say, look, we would help a CMO with all the challenges of writing the strategy and executing the strategy. And then there's the brands we already work with. And I think as an agency, I wouldn't say we've ever forgotten our clients, but I still struggle when a brand we're working with sees us as a tech SEO agency, because that's the service line they use, and they're going and using another creative agency. They don't understand how brilliant our creative agency is, but we kind of, because we do so many service lines, we almost get tarnished with that you're a sort of generalist specialist. So what our job now is making sure that our core clients understand how good our other service lines are. So to come back, you know, as an agency, what are we trying to target now? What brands? I don't think there's, I could give you a list of 20, but I'd probably be giving it away a little bit. But there's, there's people we want to work with. There's people that want to work with us, and there's people where we already work with that we need to make sure they understand what our proposition is.
Yeah.
And that's our thinking at the moment in how we want to grow and develop the agency. I think the other side to that, just the final part to that question, is we've done really well in B2B globally. We've done less well, or we haven't done as well with B2C globally. So I said to the team at the start of this year, you know, let's go out there and win 5 sort of B2C brands. Because I think as an agency, once you land a couple of really lovely B2C, recognizable B2C brands that have a, you know, UK, US or EMEA or APAC sort of coverage, you then generally win more because they see you're working with those brands. So I think B2B, we've got some great brands we've worked with and do. B2C, we've got some work to do.
Interesting. So it feels like a good step then. So let's talk a little bit more detail about the business. First of all, what was the inspiration? So you mentioned about the car journey, and you said to Sarah, I want to start an agency. What was the inspiration for that? Where did that thinking come from?
The personal or professional?
Whatever you're comfortable speaking about. Personally, I'd love to hear both.
Yeah, well, let's do personal then, and then I'll move into professional, because I guess personally, we're at a point in the agency where we were the original founder sold out or had done a VC earnout, and it was a great business. I mean, at peak we had probably 100 developers in the UK. Wow. and 50 SEOs. It was 150 people. I mean, it was a good business, you know, really good. But it was on that lovely tipping point when SEO in the UK, yeah, and we were mainly UK as an agency, it was, dare I say, quite easy. We had a relatively strong link base, so we built a website. One of the early adopters of WordPress, my CTO here now, he was there at the start of that business and almost kind of led the industry with SEO and WordPress at the time. And we are talking 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And the board appointed a kind of new CEO. And ops director actually was the original title when he was presented. And I thought that's the job I needed to come out of being the sales director. I'd built up the sales team to about 25 across the UK. So it's, you know, 25 salespeople, a couple of sales managers, and we'd built a nice machine, if you like. And
yeah.
And I needed to take that next step to get into the C-suite as a young, you know, what was I, 34, 35? And as soon as the board appointed, or the chairman appointed Guy, I thought, A, I didn't know that position was available, and B, I realised that they didn't see me in that role. So I was a bit grumpy, and I thought, if I don't take the step out of corporate world now, I never will. And also financially, I felt limited by having that kind of salary plus maybe a bonus if the business performs. So the real thing was a bit of a career grumpy decision.
Yeah.
I need to make a change now, because if not, I'll always be in corporate. And also, you know, the real driver, getting to the nub of it, was I never had a private education, but I wanted my girls, who were 4 and 8 at the time, to have what I perceived to be a better start educationally in the UK than I did. So
yeah,
I needed some sort of flexibility around what I thought my earning capacity could be. And I saw lots of people I knew in business earning a lot more money than on an employed basis. And that was it. I went home and I said, look, I think we should do this now. So the real driver, to answer your question, was my girls' education. I think I'd done enough in the corporate world with things like HR and leadership and sales to know that if I ever messed it up, then I'd done enough in my career to know that I had a fail safe to go in as a C-suite somewhere in my business. So that was the inspiration personally. Flexibility, financial independence, although it probably took about 10 years anywhere near financial independence, if at all. But I have, to this day, you know, my girls have been blessed with a lovely start in life with their schooling. So professionally, my driver is still true to this day. I used to go into businesses and it would drive me crazy where they would buy a website, have a marketing execution plan around SEO, social media, or, you know, whatever they were spending marketing on. And you'd say, okay, so talk to me about the business plan. Talk to me about the vision for the next 3 to 5 years. Talk to me about the tactics, and I'll try and help you align the marketing strategy alongside that. And it just consistently baffled me how many businesses operate without a plan. And big and small, if you're owner managed and you can be a 5 to 10 million pound business and you'll go, right, talk to me about what you've got in play, and there wouldn't be anything there. Or you'd go to a massive corporation and the detachment from the CEO's vision to the leadership's vision was so big that everyone was looking at yourself and going, I'm not sure what the plan is. We just need a new website. And I'm going, but the website is an external representation of what the brand needs to be. And da, 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 da. And so I think the professional drive was always being to connect the business plan and help businesses at all sizes and scales connect their business vision to a marketing strategy so they didn't keep hemorrhaging cash on marketing. And it sounds really simple, right? I mean, I think it's every marketer's frustration, I think.
Completely. I've lost count of how many conversations I've had with multinationals who obviously were based in Shanghai, and they'll say, right, I need a Shanghai social media channel set up. We're like, no problem, super easy. But how does that fit with your targets for China growth or your objectives for China? Or I don't, like, it's a similar sort of conversation that you're having. Yeah. And I've lost count of how many times we have that conversation.
It's crazy. And I don't think it's born out of naivety. I think it's born out of maybe time, pace, you know, bordering pressures, financial pressures. I mean, I had a brand a little while ago said, and actually being, you know, part of Amen has really helped us as an organization. One of our clients said, oh, we're just about to employ an Asian marketing person. And I was like, great. What's the brief? What's the job description? You know, what does success look like for that person in the year? It was like, oh no, we haven't got that far. and then 2 weeks later, and I said, well, stop, because actually I said, we've got partners in Asia. And, you know, if what's the reason for going to Asia? What's the strategy? What's the play? What does success look like? And maybe we should maybe take a step back, because recruitment costs are essential. You know, you need the right feet on the ground, and, you know, really knowing the heart of the brand and the business is really important. But thinking great internal teams will always, you know, trump pure outsourcing. You know, where we work with global brands, the best performance we get is when the global team is solid and the strategy is clear. So I mean, coming back to the question, the vision has always been around connecting the business need, or if the business need isn't clear, articulating that business need and helping, whether it's a board or whether it's a, you know, an owner founder, understand that and then write the strategy to align to it. And I think as we've grown and evolved as a business and a brand over the last 10 years, the way we've articulated it has slightly evolved, but the meaning behind it, or the drive behind it, hasn't. And it's really interesting, really, because I think in the last 6 months, in fact, when we were in Bangkok and I did the presentation around business and brand and tech, I think this is the closest I've ever been to be able to articulate why we exist in a framework. But it's felt like all of the 10 years of trying to put frameworks into businesses and has sort of always been leaning to this new positioning piece. So I think, you know, personally, every business owner wants to be financially free at some point in their life, I guess, or an entrepreneur, and you make decisions to try and do that. And to, you know, my children and my family are a big driver behind the decisions I make and what time I get out of bed in the morning. Personally, professionally, we should be able to make it easier for businesses to have a marketing strategy that works.
So what's the day job? So obviously you're CEO, you're over a decade down the line now. What's the kind of day-to-day role of yours within the business? And then what are some of the challenges and the opportunities that come with that?
If I was on a, if I was leading, or if I was speaking to my mentor now, he'd constantly be screaming at me to be able to build the business so it doesn't need me. you know, I don't know where I land on that. But the day job, it's funny really, because all of the leadership team and the senior leadership team, we sort of put percentages of our daily, weekly, monthly around what we should focus on. So 60% of my job description as CEO, is still business growth, business development, partnerships, building the awareness of strategic, but also that being that frontline strategy director for clients and brands.
So that's more of it. You're still client facing with that on the business.
And if I could choose to make that 80%, I'd do it. you know.
I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. Fun stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still involved. This afternoon, we've got six of the team, including me, pitching to a new client. It's a global brand. It's a global strategy. I kind of wonder, really, when you're dealing with businesses at certain scale, does it make you look too small if the CEO is involved, or does it add weight and gravitas that CEO cares enough to be involved? And, you know, I land on my view is, I think it's nice that the CEO shows that they're there as part of the onboarding of any new clients. Because, I mean, we're lucky as an agency. We only really have, at any given time, you know, 40 retained clients. So it's not a monster of a business. There's not hundreds of clients with, you know, thousands of man hours. You know, we have a select group of clients in the UK and across, you know, US and internationally. So it does mean that it needs a high level of thinking and experience behind some of the strategies and some of the, so I think 60% of my time is helping and supporting the team with client work and winning new work. 20% of the time is coaching and developing my leadership team. So I spend a lot of time with, there's five core directors and there's sort of 10 heads of departments. So I'll be doing things like one-to-ones, coaching sessions on a weekly, monthly basis. And then still involved with the day-to-day. The rest of the time is just leading and supporting the agency. You know, the best day of the week for me is a Friday. So Friday, we have a company meeting. People dial in from all over the country, but we obviously have teams in different locations. And from 8 till 9 or 8 until 9:30, we do a company weekly meeting. And the agenda is the same every week. Give me some good news. What's been happening in the agency? There's a lot of banter. There's a lot of engagement. Who's had a one-to-one and a coaching session this week? And what did you take from it? Who's got one next week? And what did you take? What you take from it? Operation updates. So I'm just hands-on. I appointed a COO at the start of last year to try and with a view that it was going to free me up to do more of the sort of growth element of the agency, be more involved with Aiming and our partnerships groups. And I had a very interesting conversation with a friend of mine who's CEO, and he said, I've tried to appoint three CEOs in the last 4 years, and I've realized that every one of them hasn't worked out because, you know, there's an element that if you're the right CEO, you're still the heartbeat of the agency. And we're not a big agency, you know, 60 people, nice, solid leadership team. You know, they're young, they're developing, but they've been with us sort of 5 years and above. So the leadership team is really nice and established now. The heads of departments are growing, and they're brilliant individuals. So we're teaching them how to do leadership roles. And then we've just got this lovely, you know, team execute stuff. So it's not that big a beast to manage now.
Yeah, that sounds, and I might be misinterpreting a little bit, but that sounds like a little bit of a learning experience from your exit from the previous agency as well, in that how you've kind of looked to be more organic and bring your senior leadership with you, as opposed to perhaps imposing a new man on it, which might not fit with where it was existing.
Yeah, it was a conscious decision that, because when we came out of COVID, I mean, everyone was just smashed up with loads of work. You know, we've got a lovely branding and web development department. The quality of the web development work that we do is, you know, I'm incredibly proud of. You know, there's lots of great agencies out there, but for us, our branding and our web development is a real strength of ours. But there's only a team of 15 across that, but we just won so much work during and post lockdown, because businesses had that money, you know, it was just like, oh, we need a website, let's do it now. So we had like a year's worth of revenue booked, and then our retainer work came back. So all of a sudden we were just like most businesses and lots of agencies, we were riding this wave, and we had the opportunity to probably recruit two, what I was calling at the time, heavyweight C-suite people to come in and help us with the next stage of growth. But it just didn't feel right, because we'd had 2 years of that young leadership team on calls at 8 o'clock in the evening trying to keep the business going.
Yeah.
So even though maybe the smarter decision may have been to bring some people in above the people that, you know, that next tier And, you know, me and the board, or myself, Sarah, my wife, who set the business up with me and, you know, is still involved as equally as me day to day, is CPO. And James, the CTO, who I mentioned from the other agency, he joined us in the early days. The three of us said, look, even if it slows down our growth, let's reward the people that have just been through a really tough time with this and have sort of almost put their backs up against the wall alongside with us. And so, yeah, we did make a conscious decision to be patient with that group. Not everyone's still here from that moment. I think two of the people that on that journey have moved on to arguably bigger and better things. You know, that's the journey they're on there. But yeah, I think we've been rewarded with that, but it has come at a cost of slowing down the growth.
Okay.
Yeah, I, you know, there, but then having said that, as I alluded to, I appointed a what I would call a heavyweight COO last year, and it just didn't work out. You know, lovely person. We thought we'd done all the right things in terms of interviews and da da da, and it just wasn't the right fit. And it may have been also that it was the first time that I tried to let go of it.
Not ready. Yeah. Interesting. Well,
I think I was ready, but it's interesting. Okay. I thought a lot. I think I was ready, but I don't think the business was.
Right. Okay. Because they're used to relying on you for what you do and what you contribute, obviously.
Yeah, I think so. I think the leadership team really struggled with the transition, and even some of the team, you know, are like not running the monthly board meeting was interesting. And there's an energy you bring as a CEO.
Yeah.
Right? And you rightly so, because that is your job. You know, I always say my job is to be the thermometer. If things are a little bit cool, you have to heat it up. If things are too hot, you have to cool it down. You know, you have to, as a CEO, understand the pace of the business is at and try as hard as you can to keep the temperature right. And I think handing that over is so difficult.
I think more so as a founder and an owner manager. As well, because you sort of build these things with a certain element of your own image within the business as well. Yeah. So it's always going to have that impact. I think if you try to take that step back, it's going to have that effect maybe.
Well, I mean, every leadership session I get involved with, I do at the moment, everyone for the last year has been talking about culture, if not forever talking about culture. And I always have this line that, you know, your culture is what you tolerate. And your culture is based around the worst performing person in your agency or business. That's your base level culture. And I think what's happened over the years is I've given responsibility away or patience with watching leadership develop their own teams and their own personalities as leader. It still comes back to the standards of you as an individual. The culture is my standards, you know, how we turn up, how we look, how we act, how we talk, how we think about strategy, how we think about a task. So all that language that comes out in your brand piece is still comes from your own standards and your own principles.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And different leaders have different standards and different principles. And that's cool. But I think that's why I say that the business wasn't quite ready for me to take a step back. We're still a young business, you know, and there is a time, obviously you talked earlier about, or the part of the question is, where is it going? Clearly, I have to let the business, my job is to let the business run without me. Clearly, that, you know, if not, I'll probably lose even more hair and go grayer and da da da, and I won't. So I think clearly the vision has to be for the business to run without me. But for the time being, you know, just accept it and enjoy it. Someone said to me, stop running away from running the business. What are you running away for? It's what you know. So
that leads us nicely. You mentioned a little bit earlier about this new positioning piece, and what I'm interested, and we've touched on it a little bit in the conversation that we just had, but I'm just interested in hearing a little bit more about what the short term and long term goals are, how that new positioning piece fits into it. And I'm interested in how you market yourselves as a business and where you, how does your own marketing fit into the strategy and the growth objectives for strategic?
Yeah, great. So three questions. I'll try and slice them up.
Sorry, I've rattled through that.
No, it's good. No, because it'll give me a flow to it. I'm so excited to have our framework and our positioning piece landed or nailed. And every time I talk about it and articulate it, it makes more sense. And the more I talk to the industry or the more I talk to clients about it, there's this kind of exception that, oh yeah, I do get that. And the reason it's slightly unique and different now is I've tried and struggled to help businesses understand the importance of tech and customer experience with marketing. And about 2 years ago, we invested heavily in our customer experience team, which in old agency language or money, was email marketing and CRM.
Yeah.
And it sort of moved and migrated into customer experience as a department. And you're now, you know, lots of big brands and big businesses have customer experience departments. But in old money, it was just email, or it was just a bit of UI and a bit of UX with a database. Yeah. And it's sort of.
One of the things that came out of the Alibaba experience over here was this omnichannel, and it's customer experience at almost every single touch point. So having that team there would make perfect sense as I think the rest of the world moves to this omnichannel. Anyway, sorry, I digress.
But the point is that everyone talks about having the customer at the heart of their strategy, but no one really, I say no one, that's black and white thinking or black and white language. And there's few people that nail it. And I think that presents us with the challenge. So the way that I've articulated it is in a traditional Venn diagram, and I'll send a link to a section of the site that does a better job of explaining it than I'm probably about to do, but I'll give it a go. So if we come back to the very first conversation about strategic and why we exist, is understanding the core business proposition. So the ability as an agency to really get under the skin of a business and understand at a P&L level what's important. And I think there's a gap in some marketing strategies that they don't dive into the P&L enough. They don't dive into the cost of doing business enough. So let's assume you get that clear. The second circle that we talk around is really, really understanding what that brand positioning piece is. You know, you could do a whole session on what a brand is, but let's assume people listening knows how to articulate brand. And now the old days, the clumsy way of talking around this in our own world was that was sort of your marketing strategy piece. But actually for me now, I think the connection between the business and the brand is the marketing strategy. The connection between brand and the third circle is tech. And that's where you connect your customer experience. If you have a really nice brand and you have really great tech, there's a really good chance that you can link your customer experience.
Sure.
And if you have really great tech and you connect that to your business plan, then that's what people are calling business transformation. And there's a lovely crossover now. If you work with an agency, and we believe we're quite close with this now, where we know how to articulate a business plan and write a business plan with a client. We know how to do a really great brand positioning piece, and we know how to set the tech up. And in the middle there is what I think integrated value is now for marketing. So if you really, as a business or a brand or as an agency, you want to get the most out of value, omnichannel marketing, let's use your language there, omnichannel marketing, which for me is just how to get the most out of the spend that you've got across different channels, how to get real value out of your marketing. If you unwind that, if you haven't got a business plan, you've got a brand positioning piece and probably a load of tech that are not connected and you're not going to get the value. If you've got a business plan, but you don't know what your brand is and you've just got loads of tech, then the brand's just going to fall apart. And if you haven't got good tech, you're just going to have a business plan with a marketing spread, a brand plan with a marketing strategy. You're just going to hemorrhage cash. Because what tech has given us the ability to do now is get good data to make good decisions. And the tech is, the tech now from what, even in the last 3 years, is mind blowing. Yeah. Whereas, we've always had, Marketo and HubSpot, and we've always had, lovely tech enabled to sort of help us over the last 5 or 10 years, but it's on another level now. So to bring that together in terms of positioning piece, the connection between the brand and the business is your marketing strategy. The brand and the tech is your customer experience strategy. The tech back to the business is your business transformation. And somewhere in the middle there is a lovely piece of value out of spend of marketing. And I think that's what I'm really excited about for the next, or for the foreseeable in terms of helping businesses understand that right at the start of this journey of brand reposition, business planning or text out. What that means to us as a business and where we're looking to go. I mean, we've got an aggressive growth plan revenue wise. We think our heads, number of staff, we've probably got the right number of people now, because ironically, we've got 60 people and 40 clients, and a lot of the agency owners look at me and go, what the hell are you doing? We've got 40, we've got 40 people and 60 clients. What's your, and you kind of look at it. So we've been in the last 2 years really investing and at the sacrifice of margin and, you know, EBITDA for the last couple of years to put a good structure of expertise under the business. And we're at that lovely point now where I think the agency is matured enough with the brands that we work with. The processes are just about there. We've probably got another 6 months of a few, because it's a nightmare job trying to run an agency that does branding, website, SEO, paid media, content, PR, you know, having all of those service lines. I always say to the team, like, we're trying to do something that's really hard. You know, if we just wanted to be a design agency, it would be a lot easier having one service line with a group of people and 60 people. So the job for the next 3 years, is to build revenue to circa, the business plan in ink says 15 million. EBITDA off the back of that should be in the service industry circa 48 clients globally or locally, spending circa 250 to half a million a year with us on marketing strategy. And that can be service line agnostic or sector agnostic. We just want to do great marketing, and we've set the vision and the departmental challenges and leadership challenges alongside that. And that would be a dream to be sitting here in three years time and going that's the journey we've been on. How we market touches on what I said earlier, which is we know the businesses we want to go and win. And we've got a strategy. There's 20 on a list. And the way that we're going to approach that is your classic AB, direct marketing. We're going to go with creative campaigns and audits and saying, look, here's some observations and opportunities we see. Can we talk? So there's a direct campaign with brands, do great work, win awards, create good partnerships. And that genuinely has created a gravity towards work we do in terms of if you do great work and people see you doing great work, they want to work with you. So that's our marketing activity in terms of show that we can do great work, put our people forward. We've not really lent in too hard to sustainability in the last 2 years. So my marketing director has a brief to not just to greenwash, you know, to generally I think we've got to mature a bit as an agency now in that space. We're certainly seeing that some of the bigger RFPs and tenders we get, you need to have an opinion and need to have a process for it. And it has to be authentic. So that's part of our marketing strategy for the next 18 months. And then just make sure we position ourselves right with our customer experience, with the people we work with. And that third bucket is, you know, what does it feel like to be a strategic client? Do we know your birthdays? Do we know your renewal dates? Are you clear on how good we are with all of our service offerings? And that, when you're so in the weeds, sometimes with running the business can get forgotten. So yeah, frameworks articulated better than it has been. And I think we're on a journey with helping clients understand that. Our business plan is absolutely, you know, in stone. We've just got to try and deliver it. And we've got a marketing strategy. I mean, if we hadn't done those two things, I'd be a bit of a hypocrite based on the last. I think we've made sure that we're waterproof when it or watertight when it comes to our thinking.
Andy, that's been fantastic, fascinating insight. It's a really exciting business. I know you and I sort of first met a few months back when we were at that conference, but I've enjoyed the interactions that we have. I think your website's awesome, and I'm really excited to kind of stay in touch and see where you guys go. Speaking of staying in touch, if there's any sort of events coming up that you're speaking at that we can highlight here, or if some of the listeners want to reach out and connect with you or connect with the business, what's the best way for them to do that?
Modern World is at LinkedIn is probably the easiest sort of platform to connect with anyone sort of worldwide. Obviously my details are on our website for anyone that wants to contact me directly, but sign up to the newsletter. You know, we have a connect with us through the website, connect with me on LinkedIn, but we send out 3 emails every month. One is about our AI council. We haven't touched on that, but the AI council does some great work around what's happening in that space. And then we always send out a monthly what's happening at strategic, what clients are we working with, what great work have we done, what awards are we at, you know. So if you want to know what's happening with strategic, connect with us on our email. If you want to speak to me personally, LinkedIn and DM, and happy to catch up with anyone if this is I wouldn't say the word inspired. It sounds a bit grandiose, but if this is intrigued anyone into what we do or how we do it. Yeah, thanks for the
fantastic.
Opportunity. Great conversation. Thanks.
No, thanks for coming up. We appreciate you taking the time. It's been an awesome. And let's do it again in maybe another couple of years' time and see where we're at.
Yeah, I'll happily check in, mate. Happily check in.
Thank you for listening to the Radical Global Marketing Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening as much as we enjoyed making it. Join us next time for more insight, best practice case studies, and shared experiences from some of the world's most radical global marketing leaders.